The field turns for home.
They're at the top of the stretch.
Top of the stretch.
They're into the stretch.
And here they come into the final furlong.
Final furlong.
Final furlong.
Into the final furlong.
They go inside the final furlong.
This is the final furlong on HRRN Live.
HRRN Live.
It's Trainer Talk Wednesday, presented by Bullet Train.
Bullet Train.
Frankel's three-quarter brother, standing at Wintergreen Stallion Station. Now, here's Mike Pena and Jude Feld.
Well, good afternoon once again, everybody, and welcome to this final furlong edition, Trainer Talk edition, here on Wednesday evening. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Feld, Pontiff of the Pick Four, and ready to roll for the next hour, talking with a couple of trainers that have different backgrounds, but some interesting things to tell us about, and can't wait to get to it. Trainer Ralph Nix is going to be here in the first half of the show, and then in the second half of the show, we're going to be joined by trainer Chad Brown. So JT, going to be a busy hour. Should be a lot of fun to hear these stories.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's always great to hear what trainers have to say about their lives and how they got started, and it's going to be fun.
And we do welcome everybody back that has been with us for the past 3 hours on XM 209, listening to our live racing coverage, and a very special welcome to all of you just joining us across North America on Sirius Channel 93, and of course on Internet Smartphone Channel 961. Well, let's not waste any time getting right to our special guest. Ralph Nix will be here for the first half hour with us, and he is a 46-year-old native of Avery, Texas, a son of trainer Morris Nix. Began training horses in January of 2004, and since that time, his runners have earned more than $8 million. Ralph, thanks so much for taking the time. Happy to have you aboard today.
Very good, guys.
Ralph, look, this show, as I told you on the phone, much more about you, your life, your background, kind of how you got started as opposed to the horses that you have in training now. And I know, like a lot of trainers, you had horse racing and you had training in your pedigree from a very young age.
Yes, my father has trained on his own since he was, I don't know, 17 or 18 on a small scale, and, you know, in the Louisiana, Arkansas circuit. So, you know, I got in my upbringing, you know, been around them since I could kind of walk.
What do you remember about those early days when you were just a kid and watching your dad train and being around the game? What do you remember about that?
Just early days. I mean, there was always a horse around, and, you know, we learned how to clean stalls, lead a horse, and learned about personalities of horses by, you know, by accident. I mean, when you're a kid, you learn a lot about whatever you're around, whatever your surroundings are. And fortunately with me, it was the horses, which, you know, helps me today read their personalities and how they're doing.
Most young guys idolize their fathers. And, you know, when you're growing up on the track, you know, it's easy to get it in your blood. But what was the day or any event that kind of made you think, I want to train horses too?
Well, I mean, when I was early on, I was small, and after I rode races for 3 years, so in my early days, I was horseback most of the time, and took that route early. So I, you know, had the feel for a horse and got to ride all the time and exercise in the mornings, and then, you know, fortunate enough to ride races in the afternoons for a couple of years. I wasn't as talented as that as I still am on the ground, but on the other hand, I got to do that experience, so it kind of become, you know, everything that I've gotten to do has just led to the next step.
Do you find that race riding experience helps you when you're trying to tell jocks what you have to do, or is it frustrating that you can't go out there and ride them yourself?
Well, I think it helps me watch a race and understand what's going on, and post race, you know, you kind of know what's happened during the race, and while you're watching the races, you can kind of see things materializing and have an idea of what's getting ready to happen to you instead of what, you know, what happens at the time. We kind of see it coming.
Ralph, you've trained 208 winners to date, and just curious, I'll put you on the spot a little bit here. Do you remember how many winners that you rode?
Yeah, I rode. Now it was somewhere in, I don't know, in the 100 range or something like that. Probably a little over 100. I don't know what it was exactly. Like I said, you know, I feel my talent level as a trainer is a hell of a lot better than it was as a jockey.
Who was your first winner in the saddle? Are you there?
Yeah, hello.
There he goes. who was your first winner that you ever rode?
My first winner was a horse by the name of Admiral Did. It was in 1983, and he was a homebred of my father that we was born and raised on the farm in Texas, and I was around him from the time he was born into his racing career.
How was that riding for your dad? Some quiet dinners after the races, or was he very supportive of your riding career?
Well, I mean, I rode match races from the time I was 11 until I was 16. So when I made mistakes when I was 16 through 19, in his mind, I wasn't supposed to make those mistakes because I had a lot of experience going into it. So there was a few little, I don't know if you want to say quiet evenings. He voiced his opinion pretty well.
Ralph, you said you feel like you're a much better trainer than you were a rider. When I called you yesterday to ask you to join us on the show, you were at the driving range hitting golf balls, and I'm just curious, better trainer or better golfer?
Trainer. The golf is just a release to get away where you'll forget about the training. I don't understand why we do the golf for enjoyment, because training is high pressure, a lot of things you can't control, and in the golf, it's not like that comes easy.
Yeah, it's training horses can be a pleasure if you're a golfer.
What's your handicap?
I don't know. I've just started. I've been just starting to take it, I don't say serious, just we play once a week, so I would probably say I'm somewhere around a 20.
Are you taking lessons from Dan Bork?
We're actually playing Saturday.
Dan Bork, of course, the racing secretary down at Gulfstream Park. He'll be leaving that position shortly. You had to be disappointed to see him go.
Very. I mean, I've been around Dan for, through the years in Kentucky when I was working for Mott. I've seen him come on the scene at Kingland and through Churchill. And, it's nice to have people in the office that you've known for a long time because you know the personalities, you know what to expect. And, we seem to work together well.
Trainer Ralph Nix, our special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Bullet Train on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Ralph, let's go back to when you started working with your dad. How old were you when you actually started working with him on the training side of things? And talk about some of the things that he taught you that you still use today.
Well, I mean, I think a big part of that's work ethic. I mean, being raised on the farm in Texas and, being a family that didn't, we were all work together because it was small scale. Get up in the morning, take care of horses before I caught the school bus to go to school. And, when I came home, get off the bus in the afternoons, I had my afternoon chores. Mom and dad worked other jobs also. So it wasn't like we had, 40 head of horses there and that was the main thing. Everybody in the family had to work to make, to make a living. So I think that paid off. That paid off a lot, and then by doing that, like I said, at an early age, you learn things about the animals, about being around them. I mean, you learn about the personalities, how to handle them, what to expect, and, just they become part of you.
And you kind of had the best of both worlds, because after you left your dad, you went on to become assistant for Hall of Fame trainer Bill Mott. You worked with him for about 14 years. And I loved your quote in the Oaklawn Park Media Guide where you said that, "I like to think I got my bachelor's degree in horse training under my dad and my master's under Bill Mott."
Well, I take that quote, and I'll always use that quote for reason being. I mean, coming up with my father, it was more of the meat and potatoes horses. If we had a horse for 20,000 claiming, he was something special. Working with Bill for those years, being more advanced in our diagnostics and able to be on a level where people could afford to do things on the higher end. I mean, being able to work with the veterinarians and that sort of thing, and working against having lamenesses or catastrophic injuries, and then being around the good horses and not being intimidating by having a real good horse in the barn, I think has really helped me as much as anything. When I get a good horse, I thrive on that because, fortunately being around, let's say, Gar and Paradise Creek, Athena, Gina, and Elusive Quality, all those type of individuals, you know, they're still a horse. They need, you know, they all, at the end of the day, they all need the same amount of care. It's just, I'm not intimidated when those kind of horses walk in the barn.
You're also a very hands-on guy. I mean, you run a smaller stable. You're not, you know, far flung like some of these outfits are. Do you think a lot of that comes from your dad's work ethic and the fact that you were around the barn so much? You really like to spend a lot of time with your horses.
Well, I mean, of course, I'd like to have more. I have no inspirations of being one of the, you know, 150 horse outfit guys. I mean, I would like to expand a little bit, you know, 20-25 in Florida in the summertime, and the same in New York in the summertime would be ideal for me, because you get to have a little more one-on-one with each individual and train them accordingly. I think when you get too big, they have to fit into your routine or your program. I really envy a lot of the guys that do that and make it work. I mean, you know, Max Boss, he does a great job with it, which he's had the same staff for years. It's like where I was there 14 years. Kenny and those guys have been there, you know, since the mid-90s, most of the assistants. That makes it work a lot better. You know, then your organizational skills come involved. But, you know, I just enjoy being able to train the horse, because not every horse has the same personality.
Ralph, I love what you said about not being intimidated when a good horse comes into your barn. And you went out on your own in 2004. It didn't take very long to record that first graded stakes victory, Cool Conductor winning the Grade 2 Dixie at Pimlico in 2005. When did you know that was a good horse in your barn?
Well, actually, I was involved in the purchase of that horse as a two-year-old. I was still working for Mott when that horse was purchased, and Dave Garner came to me at Keeneland at the two-year-old sale, and I'd had the horse shortlisted. Him and a friend of his, Bill Heminger, had come, "What about this horse that he has? Have you seen him?" "Yeah, I saw him. I liked him." I said, "He didn't have a lot of pedigree, but he, you know, very nice, athletic individual." So when I went on my own, Dave being from Louisville, me running the Churchill division, me and him had been acquainted probably more than him than the ex-boss, and he gave me a good horse to get started with, and we, you know, beat the champion that day, and it was a very, very exciting horse race.
Well, when you have a horse like that, it helps to put you on the map. You've had some really terrific owners over the years. Why don't you talk about the people that have helped you along the way?
Well, I mean, Mr. Garner, of course, giving me Cool Conductor. Probably my earliest, biggest supporter, and still to this day, is Mr. Spence, which, you know, we won the Grade 2 Inside Information 4-2 weekends ago with Gulfstream. Those guys have been there. They're not, you know, large owners. They're, you know, a couple two-year-olds every year, and, you know, so you average anywhere from, you know, three to five for those guys. And now Paul Saylor's come aboard, which I've had for the last 3 years, and or a little longer than that, because it's part of Starlight at the time when I had a couple of their B stringers. But those guys have been really great to me, been real loyal, and just hopefully they can come up with some nice horses to support them.
Didn't you have Barry Irwin and Team Valor at one point there as well, Ralph?
Yeah, they very hired me privately, and, you know, things didn't end up as the way I would like to have at the end of it. But through some of the lovely New York rules, I got a short suspension over something that really didn't amount to anything. But, you know, they went their way. Then I received horses for them again. You know, I've had the one here, there, yonder, but... you know, the Team Valor thing, it was a good learning experience. You know, I don't look back with any regrets there. For a fact, I sent Barry an email, congratulations on the World Cup. They've done a fine job with that horse, and Graham has done a fine job. And you know, as you're young, you learn things, and everything has, you know, been forward ever since.
A lot of times we talk to owners when we're on the road, they complain about communication with their trainers, and you know, a guy like you that has a smaller stable can spend some time, you know, educating the clients and talking to them. Why don't you talk about that and your philosophy with your clients?
Well, I think that does work a little bit better because you have time to speak with them. And, you know, when they call in the mornings or you work a horse, you can call them, you know, shortly afterwards, let them know how the horse went and you know, what the plans are or what kind of ideas you have. I mean, when you have a lot of them, your communication turns into emails or the assistant speaking with them, which is fine. Like I said, a lot of the big guys do a great job at it, but I don't want to be to the point where, you know, you can't have some sort of personal relationship with your clientele, because in our sport, you know, there's a lot of down days, and the people, you know, you just have to accept that. And I think one of the ways to do it is just enjoy the whole ride.
Ralph, you mentioned some of the superstars that you had the privilege to be around when you were working with Hall of Famer Bill Mott. You mentioned Cigar and Agena and Asena. I mean, the list goes on and on. But look back on that run with Cigar and what it was like to be part of that streak, and as the pressure mounted with every race. Just look back on that streak and what was it like to be part of that?
Well, I mean, you always look back, especially growing up where I did with the everyday horse. To be around one of the greatest of all times is something that nobody would ever forget. But being hands-on, getting to get on him, you know, a little bit before the Dubai World Cup, and being in charge or being a big part of something like that is always special, something you would never trade for. During the ride of it, it was kind of like a dream. I mean, at the end of it, you know, you're going to pinch yourself and when you're going to wake up. But on the other hand, you know, when it got getting close to the 16, it got to be where it was just automatic for him to win every time he went over there. I think after he finally was defeated, everybody kind of took a deep breath and it's over, but now he can be a real horse. I mean, it just at that point, I mean, everybody has walked around on pins and needles so much with him.
What kind of horse was he to get on in the mornings?
Aggressive. He was nice. You know, I think as the streak went along, I mean, his confidence level, you know, rose, of course. And, you know, he knew he was special. And he was very classy. I mean, he knew when the cameras were around. He knew when race day was.
Do you get the butterflies in your stomach when you get aboard a horse like that? And you've been aboard so many, but you get on one like that, do you start getting those butterflies a little bit?
I think, fortunately, before he came along, I had been around enough of the others that when I got on him, my first wife, Judy, was getting on him. We'd had a cold spell in Florida, and he was getting a little strong, and Bill had me get on him there for the 2 weeks leading up to Dubai. And, you know, one of the first things, you know, everybody's, like I said, on pins and needles around him. And I looked at Bill and said, you know, just let me treat him like a regular horse, and me and him will get along just fine. And I think that's one of the main things like I said early, being around some of the good ones, not getting intimidated by one of them, makes me do a better job with those kind of horses.
Yeah, as you're training a horse like that, the fact that you do treat him that way really seems to help. I know a lot of times when you ship a horse out of town and you send two or three people with them, the horse gets kind of nervous because everybody's paying attention to him all the time. And
that's one of the things that happens a lot. I think on some of the special horses, we forget to let them be a horse. And you do have all the people surrounding them. Everybody's watching over them. You don't want anything happening to them, and we put too much pressure on them.
Yeah, that's absolutely for sure, I think.
14
I mean,
years.
I watched it happen at Derby. I mean, I was there for 20 of them in a row, and, you know, the horse, there's constantly people outside the barn. I mean, you're having to put, you know, keep people around to keep people back. Well, the horse can be a horse. I mean, that's one of the things that I think it's important to give them a little space and back away. Let them be who they are.
Visiting with trainer Ralph Nix here on Trainer Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, all presented by Frankel's three-quarter brother, Bullet Train, standing at Wintergreen Stallion Station in Midway, Kentucky. Ralph, what are 14 years is a long time to be an assistant, and to learn under Bill Mott for that time, certainly very, very special. We talked about Cigar, but what are some of the other memories that will stand out to you about being part of that team?
Being one of the regular exercise riders for Paradise Creek was special because he was a very challenging horse. One of my favorites was Asena because she seemed to spend time with me and Simon Bray as much as she did with Bill Mott, and having her 6 weeks leading up to the Breeders' Cup Distaff and her running the race she did. I mean, it's somewhat self-rewarding by being trusted, number one. Number two, producing, you know, the winner of a race like that, and exciting as it was with, you know, Banshee Breeze, you know, holding her off by a short lip.
Yeah, what do you remember about watching that race? Where were you? Are you there?
Hello.
Yeah, okay, there. Yeah. What do you remember about watching that race and that duel with Banshee Breeze? Where were you when you watched it?
Standing, I was in a box on the lower level close to the tunnel at Churchill Downs. So I was watching it on TV and watching them live come by. And it, like I said, it was just a very, very exciting stretch duel. And then, you know, with Carl being a friend for a long time, plus, you know, we were barn neighbors at Gulfstream Park during that. All those years I worked for Mott, so I got to watch Banshee Breeze train every day and this and that. So we, you know, it was little fun along the side with us two rooting against one another, yet for one another. But, you know, the main thing is, like I said, it was just special being trusted with her for that amount of time and rewarding for the outcome.
As your career developed, I'm sure you had several horses that were special to you that you've trained. Talk about those a little bit.
I mean, of course, you know, Cool Conductor has been involved in the purchase there, but, you know, probably one of the most rewarding races so far has been, you know, far as the better horses, was the filly that just won the Inside Information, RBK. We've liked her. I've had, you know, all of her siblings working for Mr. Spence, and they've all had their issues. And, you know, we showed the patience last year after August when I wasn't happy with her, but yet she wasn't nothing majorly wrong with her being able to come back and win the grade two off almost a 7-month layoff. I think that was very rewarding and showing that, you know, patience pays off if you've got the individual to work with. Yeah, well, there's some of the claiming horses. I claimed a little horse called Scat Cat Jamie at Oakland Park when I first went on my own publicly for $10,000. Then we made $140,000, won 7 out of 14 races with him in 13 months. Now, that was, you know, one of the fun little horses just because every time we let him over there, he performed.
Yeah, that's a question we often ask trainers, you know, because everybody, you know, knows the stakes horses, but a lot of times your best work isn't necessarily with a good horse. Sometimes good horses are relatively easy to train, but it's those ones that, you know, you claim or you buy at a sale for cheap or something and you do some good work that nobody really knows but you. So that's great.
Right. Well, that's, you know, like that's those self-rewarding things that most, you know, a lot of people don't notice. I mean, you get, you know, the only thing they look at on the claiming thing is the percentage of the guy and how they're doing. And then, you know, on the upper end, everybody remembers the horse. So, I mean, I think there's two ways it's really good for us at the end of the day. It's either be, you know, high percentage on the everyday horse or have the horse. And that's, you know, some of the hurdles we face in the business. But they're all horses. We're all blessed to have them. We're blessed doing what we're doing, you know, to have the animal. And it's just, it's great to do what I do for a living because, you know, people look at horses being pets and I get to do it for a job.
Yeah, Richard Mandela told me one time, he said, I hope nobody exposes us and makes us get a real job.
There would probably be a bunch of us be suicidal if you put us in a room doing the same thing every day. We'd probably, we would probably need Prozac or something.
Yeah, no kidding.
Ralph, how often do you still talk horses with your dad?
He's actually in town for 2 days. I mean, we talk occasionally about things. I've been, you know, very fortunate to have a little more quality than what he's had through his life. But, I guess the other side is he helps keep me grounded a little bit. But it most of the work, I mean, for me and even for Mott with Vanberg over those years, a lot of the things that we do come from those kind of horses. So, we converse on a lot of things.
Well, I mentioned you saddled 208 winners. Your dad's currently sitting at 719 for his career. You going to catch him?
I live long enough. I hope to. I mean, Dad's done a fabulous job for what he's been dealt throughout the years, and starting out with, he only had a very, very few horses early on in his life. The last 7-8 years is when he's really been blessed with enough numbers to do what he's accomplished, being in Louisiana. But those can happen. I mean, every win counts. We look, when you win the one today, you're looking for the next one. So, it's the goal is to do the best job I can, win the best races I can, do the best for the people I work for, and, have good health and a good reputation at the end of the day.
One thing about a Morris Nixhorse, they always seem to beat the spread.
they'll be a Texas bred, outrun somebody that.
Yeah.
you never can leave that out, that's for sure.
Well, Ralph, look, we really appreciate you taking the time. Hard to believe it's been a half an hour already, but thank you so much for being here on Trainer Talk tonight. All the best moving forward here and hit them straight.
All right, guys. Thanks for the interview. Y'all enjoy, and I'll see y'all around. Hopefully we'll have more to talk about as the year goes.
All right,
good stuff. Thanks, Ralph.
Thanks, Ralph. Ralph Nix. Chad Brown coming up in the second half of the show. That was fun.
Yeah, it was really entertaining.
It's a family affair with the Nix, no doubt about that. All right, Chad Brown on the other side of the break. Stay tuned. Trainer Talk presented by Bullet Train.
To Trainer Talk, presented by Bullet Train on HRRN. Bullet Train, it's time to get on board.
Group-winning Bullet Train, the sensational three-quarter brother to the amazing racehorse Frankel, has captured the hearts and dreams of everyone who's seen him. Handsome and correct, he was precocious enough to win his debut at 2 with a massive 113 time form rating. Bullet Train had the speed American breeders seek and the class to defeat 11 horses who won or placed in a Group 1. And his pedigree, well, being bred by Judmont Farm, says it all. This year, Bullet Train joins Montjou and Galileo as top sons of Sadler's Wells at stud. He stands at Wintergreen Stallion Station in Midway, Kentucky for a $7,500 stud fee. For more information, call Sean Feld at 859-519-9665. Bullet Train has arrived at the station. It's time to get on board.
Have you always dreamed of being at Churchill Downs on the first Saturday in May? Have clients, partners, or employees who deserve to be rewarded with the trip of a lifetime? Then visit DerbyBox.com. DerbyBox.com has been fulfilling Derby dreams for more than 25 years. Your Kentucky Derby package is just a click away, so don't delay. Visit DerbyBox.com and you'll be on your way to experience the two greatest minutes in sports. DerbyBox.com is not affiliated with Churchill Downs or any of its associated companies.
How would you like to make a free $50,000 win wager on this year's Preakness Stakes? Duh! Of course you would! First, you'll need to become the grand prize winner of the $50,000 Express Bet Preakness Big Bet promotion. Then it's off to Baltimore. Top prize includes a trip for two to the Preakness, accommodations and tickets to the main event, so you'll be trackside to route your horse and money home. Express Bet's Preakness Big Bet is effortless to play. Earn one entry for each wager you make with Express Bet between now and May 4th, Kentucky Derby Day. The more wagers you make, the more chances you have to win. Runner-up prizes include $50, $100 Express Bet wagering credits. And remember, with Express Bet's Bet and Get, new account holders can earn up to $125 in wagering credit immediately. Visit ExpressBet.com today for complete Big Bet details, to register for the promotion, and to open a new no-fee wagering account.
Account wagering is not permitted in all states. National Problem Gambling Support Line, 1-800-522-4700.
Follow HR.
KRRN along the road to the Kentucky Derby Saturday with live coverage of the Santa Anita Derby and the Wood Memorial. Join our Eclipse award-winning broadcast team beginning at 5 p.m. Eastern Saturday, April 6th on Sirius Satellite Radio Channel 93 or listen live online at horseracingradio.net. The Santa Anita Derby and the Wood Memorial, only on HRRN, your home for Kentucky Derby 139.
This is HRRN, your exclusive home for Kentucky Derby 139.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Bullet Train, Frankel's three-quarter brother, standing at Wintergreen Stallion Station in Midway, Kentucky. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, Jude Felt, Pontiff of the Pick Four, coming to you from our Lexington, Kentucky studios. We will not be here this weekend, though. We'll be heading out to Santa Anita on Thursday morning. We'll be there to bring you exclusive coverage of the Santa Anita Derby and the Wood Memorial. That all comes your way Saturday afternoon, 5 to 7:30 Eastern time. So mark that down. Be sure to join us on Sirius Channel 93 and streaming worldwide on our website, horseracingradio.net, as we continue to take you down that road to the first Saturday in May as your exclusive home for Kentucky Derby 139. JT, a fun interview in the first half of the show with Ralph Nix, and we now turn our attention to somebody who I have been really looking forward to having on the program. It's trainer Chad Brown, a native of Saratoga, New York. Pretty smart guy. He graduated from Cornell University in 2001 with a degree in animal science. Been training on his own for just 6 years, believe it or not. 2007 is when he started. He's already trained 412 winners, including a pair of Breeders' Cup champions, and his runners have earned over $24 million. Not too shabby.
Yeah. What has he done for me lately?
Well, Chad is here with us, and Chad, we certainly appreciate it. Is it safe to say that this has been somewhat of a meteoric rise to stardom for you?
Well, I've been lucky. Worked for the right people, and I've been real fortunate to have some great clients help me get started and then hire me. As we've done okay. So it's just been a run of good luck for me.
All right, first things being first, Cornell University. Are they really the big red bears? Is that right?
Yeah. normally pretty good hockey teams up there. And after I left, unfortunately, some of the basketball got pretty good. But great place to go to school. I learned a lot there about business and science. And some of it I still use today in my own business.
Did you play any sports there?
No.
Talk about that. Talk about going to school and running your business, and obviously, you know, you've got it all together. A lot of times young trainers ask me for advice about, you know, training and being in the training business. And I always tell them the business end is just as important as the horse end. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, I'd say that'd be good advice. You're trying to run a stable, you obviously have a lot of overhead as well. And, in terms of employees, and there's so many different costs involved, and obviously, you know, all your expenses for running the stable in terms of, you know, different locations you're in and feed, insurance, whatever they are, and you really have to have a close eye on your business and how you manage your money, because the profit margins are slim, and if mistakes go unnoticed for a lengthy period of time, they can be costly.
Well, Chad, I mentioned those very lofty statistics when I did your introduction here, and, you know, certainly well-deserved accolades. But go back to the beginning. Talk about Chad Brown becoming hooked on horse racing. How'd you become a fan?
Just growing up in Saratoga, going to the track with my parents growing up, and just fell in love with horses. Loved Saratoga. You know, when I was younger, it was just the month of August, the only time they were racing in Saratoga. So it was a short meet, and you had to take advantage of the racing days that were there. So we tried not to miss any. And from there on out, I just knew I wanted to work with horses.
You know, it's funny. I can relate to your story in terms of getting into the game at Saratoga, because I grew up in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, and cut my teeth on racing at Saratoga. And the first time I remember going to the races really able to go and bet with my friends and kind of hang out on my own was the Traverse Stakes in 1989 when Easy Goer won. What's your first memory of Saratoga and going to the races? What do you remember about that?
Wow. I definitely remember Easy Goer. That was one of my favorite horses growing up. And just so many great memories. I can't really – I was going to the track at such a young age that I don't even remember the very first time I went. It was just so little. And so many great memories. Holy Bull is another horse that came to mind that I really liked growing up. And just a great place. And obviously all the best horses in the country would go there for the month of August. So we were really spoiled growing up to really see the best. And like I said, I just fell in love with the sport and tried to figure out a way where I could get involved in it.
Did you always know that you wanted to train? Was that a focus for you?
Yeah, I didn't really grow up in a horse family, so to speak, and we're just fans. So I needed to start working with horses at some level. So I actually started with standardbred horses locally because that was something that's more of a year-round horse racing sport. And I learned a lot from working with standardbreds. And then from there on out, I had summer jobs working for Chuck McGee. He was my first thoroughbred job while I was going to school at Cornell. And then down the road, I ended up landing a job with Frankel and moved to California. So during the whole process, when I was at Cornell, momentarily I thought about, after I got my undergrad degree, going to vet school. But the more I worked with Chuck, that's when I really figured out that my true passion would be training horses, not being a veterinarian. So after I got my undergrad degree, I went to work for Frankel and moved to California.
It's interesting to hear you say that you learned a lot in working with standardbreds before you got into the thoroughbred side of things. Are there certain things that you took away from that working with standardbreds that you apply now to what you're doing with the thoroughbreds?
Occasionally, yeah. Obviously, there's a lot of differences between the two breeds, but there are some similarities. I would say that some of the ailments horses have can be similar between the two breeds. So things that you may have learned working on a standardbred feed, for instance, you may take a few things from there and apply it to, you know, when you have a foot injury with a thoroughbred. And there's other sorts of little ailments that I've seen common therapies be successful between the two breeds. So I definitely learned a lot there, standardbreds that I still use today.
And you mentioned working for Shug McGahey, obviously Hall of Famer, native of Lexington, Kentucky, one of the best in the business. You learned under the best with Shug and with Bobby Frankel. Just curious, when you see Shug come on the scene with a big horse like he did this past weekend with Orb in the Florida Derby, what kind of goes through your mind? What's your reaction to seeing Shug back on the Derby trail with a big horse?
I think it's great. Such a patient trainer. I learned a lot from him. And great to see him have a horse that has a real shot to win the Derby. I know he's been close a couple times, and if he has the right horse, there's no question he can win the race. He's one of the best there are. So happy to see that.
It could be quite an afternoon with Normandy Invasion and Orb coming down to the line of finish together, huh?
Well, in that case, I hope I get my nose on the line. So if I can't win it, I certainly hope he does.
Yeah, the student has become the teacher at that point, right? Absolutely. What led you to move to Bobby? What led you not to, I guess, why wouldn't you stick with Shug? Why'd you move on to Bobby Frankel?
Just want to see another system. And, you know, in this game, you see several different trainers at the top level that do things a little different. So there's more than one way to do this. And I think that knowing more than one system and being open-minded about different strategies that can work training horses and different strategies, how you deal with problems with horses is also important. It's going to be helpful for you. So moving to California, looking for Frankel, really changed my outlook on training horses. He had a different way of doing things, and I think they both have their strengths and their comfort zone for the basic structure of their systems. And I took bits from both, really, when I built my own system. And and I'm still learning as I go. And, you know, those are the two guys I worked for. But I also observe trainers that I haven't worked for. But if you watch them close enough, you can pick things up from them. And that's one thing I learned from Bobby. I'll try to pick his brain about, you know, you seem to have all this mastered. How did you learn it? Who did you work for? And it's not so much what I worked for. It's I just watch people over the years, what works and what doesn't, and then I try it myself. And that's really what I learned from Bobby about how he learned. So I learned a great deal from him, but I'm always watching people to see what they're doing and trying to pick up things if I can.
Yeah, Bobby was a tremendous observer and probably the most natural horseman for a guy that grew up in New York and not around horses. I mean, he really had an affinity for the animals, but he was also very innovative and he would try different things. And I remember he had a horse that used to bolt all the time, and Buster Milrick said he could fix the horse, so he got him this bit, and Buster dug it out of an old trunk somewhere in the barn and gave it to Bobby, and the horse started running, you know, like a rat in a barrel. And Bobby was the kind of guy that, you know, he was as great as he wasn't afraid to take advice from somebody that he thought, you know, had a clue, and he would innovate and adjust. One of the greatest things he taught me as a trainer was that horses change from year to year. What worked with a horse last year may not work with them this year. And I thought that was a great lesson.
Yeah. And I saw the same with him, and, a natural feel for horses, which was really something you couldn't teach. I try to learn as much as I can, but his natural feel for horses I've never seen before.
Chad, I only had the opportunity to be around Bobby Frankel for about an hour or so one morning at Keeneland. We stood down there, it was raining out, and we stood down in the barn in his office and just got talking with him, and it was just amazing to hear some of the stories that he would tell. What are some of your favorite Bobby Frankel moments when you were working with him?
We don't have a long enough show, I don't think. one thing I learned from him, everyone could see how good he was off a layoff and how he could pick a target far, far off in the distance and hit it. And I remember one day at Hollywood Park, we had a filly named Wild Spirit that was an import from Chile. That was supposed to be, you know, one of the best horses to come out of there in recent years. And they gave the horse to Bobby to train. And she was a very high-strung horse and extremely difficult to gallop. And this was in January at Hollywood Park. And one day, the filly got loose out on the track. She tried to run off with the rider and dump the rider and run around the track a couple times, and Bobby was really going nuts over it because just, only he knew how good she was coming from Chile. We really hadn't known because she hadn't run yet. She'd only been there a couple months. And he was just going crazy, and the horse ran off the track, and luckily the outrider made a tremendous catch off a gap and really prevented her from getting injured. And when we got back to the barn, Bobby was all out of breath and concerned about her. And once he knew she was okay, he turned to me and said, "I'm going to win the Delaware Handicap with that filly." And I thought about it, and I said, "You know, Bobby, that race is in July. I know when the race is. That's where I'm going to run her." And don't you know, she won the Delaware Handicap that year. Wow. And I remembered after she won that night thinking, he told me that in January he's going to win that race. So for him to be thinking that far ahead, half a year, about a horse that just got loose on the track, we hadn't even breezed her yet. She didn't even breeze for us. It was very, very impressive.
I think you emulate him in that regard. I mean, I see a lot of his style of placement where you put your horses and how you manage them. Because I knew him so well and I knew kind of his MO, and I see your horses, and you do a lot of the same things as far as, you know, prepping for a particular race, and you don't miss the mark very often either. So, I think that's one area that you really excel at. Talk about your race selection and that type of thing.
Yeah. Well, what I learned from Bobby is just observing the horses and trying to figure out and predict what they're going to be best at in terms of what distance, what surface, and then of course, what level, what class level. And once you get a good, you know, you're not always right, but you try to get a handle before they ever run of what they're destined to do, and then try to figure out how do I get them there. And that's what I try to do. And I try to identify their strengths and then play to their strengths when I enter the horses. So that's a lot of it right there. And like you said, he had a great feel for that. And so it's pretty much my approach when I'm placing the horses.
Trainer Chad Brown, our special guest here on Trainer Talk, presented by Bullet Train on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Chad, you got to observe some amazing horses when you were with Bobby. Ghost Sapper, Intercontinental, Empire Maker, Ginger Punch. Talk about some of those horses that you were fortunate enough to be around and some of those memories you have of them.
Yeah, just tremendous time. So lucky to have worked for him during that time when he had so many great horses and to work around him. All the horses just mentioned, in addition, Medaglia d'Oro is probably, for me, pound for pound, the best horse I worked around, I'd say. There's some great horses. I mean, it could be debatable who had the most talent or who was the fastest one, and there's so many great ones that you'd hate to discount any of them. But if I had to pick one horse that was an absolute iron horse, and overall, it's probably the best one with him. He campaigned year after year and workout after workout. I saw that horse work, and he never breathed bad one day we ever had that horse. And he actually punished a lot of horses that worked with him or ran against him, because it would often be the last time they ever ran well if they did run with him to the wire, if you look back. And he really stood the test of time, that horse, and I think that's why he's been a good stallion, that horse. But behind him, of course, so many grade one winners that time Bobby has. Very lucky to be around him.
I know Ginger Punch holds somewhat of a special place in your heart, doesn't she?
Yeah, it was the last horse I ever saddled as an assistant to Bobby, and she was very special horse in her own right, just a real overachiever. When she came in, she didn't come in with real high regards, just, you know, as a nondescript two-year-old that had poor confirmation and had some issues that she had to work through her whole life, some soundness issues, but had the heart of a champion. And for her to win that last race at Monmouth Park the way she did, where she battled back on the rail on an off track, really summed up her whole career, really, because that was her. She was one that when she was cornered, she'd fight. From the first day we ever breezed that horse, we saw her pin her ears and just go after another horse from her first three-ace work. And I said, wow, this filly here has some sort of tenaciousness about her. And she carried that through her whole career. Great horse.
Well, Chad, you've been so fortunate, and I guess a lot of this just comes from raw talent on your behalf, but in 6 years, you've had two Breeders' Cup winners with Zagora and Merrim, and a lot of people wait a lifetime and a full career trying to find one. You've had two in 6 years. You've been right there with some other ones. Look back on your career now and some of the horses that have been so vital in launching you to the top.
Well, of course, Merrim, my first full year of training in 08. I started in November of 07, and then in 08 for my first year to end up with a Breeders' Cup winner. It was just amazing. Very fortunate that filly came around at the right time for me when I was just getting started, and it was just a great horse for me. And obviously, on top of that, Stace Salida, Zagora, Mr. Schwartz gave me an opportunity to train for him. Two champion mares I've had, very, very lucky to have them. And Zagora, my first grade one winner, Diana. Awesome Feather was a challenge, but a talented horse that taught me a lot. And, I really got to call on a lot of my experience with that horse. When you're backed in a corner on with a problem on a high-profile horse, you just have to go on what you know and cross your fingers. And fortunately, it worked out with her, another great horse. I was lucky to have the opportunity to train. And been several nice horses behind them and several clients that have helped me. So we're off to a good start so far.
Yeah, awesome feather. I think you maybe took a page out of the Frankel book there. You know, they say the only guy that was good with a bow was William Tell, but I always say that's not true. Bobby Frankel was the best. I mean, the guys from New York would be running horses at Belmont Park, and they'd get tendons, and they'd send them to Bobby, and Bobby would fix them up, and they would run like trained pigs. And I knew they gave awesome feather to the right guy when you got her.
Yeah. Well, thanks. I did call on a specific incident with Bobby with a horse we had one time when I worked for him that had a tendon, and we didn't think he'd make it back. And I basically followed the exact same approach we did back at Hollywood Park back then on that horse with her. And cross your fingers, because you know, training horses with a tendon, you can do everything they're supposed to do, and then when they start bruising again, they re-injure it. So with her, luckily, she held together and really had the heart to work through it. Really special horse.
Chad, as I was looking back through some of your statistics, I noticed that in that very first year, 2007, when you went out on your own, you only had four starters with the one win from those four starters. Who was that horse?
Horse named Dual Jewels for Ken and Sarah Ramsey. I had two owners help me get started. Ken and Sarah Ramsey and Gary and Mary West. They each gave me five horses. They're both extremely important, helped me get started, and they're really the reason I went into business.
Yeah, talk about that and your relationship with them, and then some of the other owners you've been fortunate to be involved with over the course of the past 6 years.
Like I said, those two sets of clients really were instrumental getting me started. Particularly Gary and Mary West, because they actually loaned me money also to get started. And very, very kind-hearted people and like to see young people do good. And then on to the next spring when we just started to get things rolling, other clients after that have come in behind them, and they've all contributed to our barn success. And that's what it's all about. I mean, having owners that are passionate about the game and are willing to put the money up for the sport and trust their trainers is really what I think holds the whole game up. So just trying to do well for them and follow through in the trust they have in me.
Trainer Chad Brown, our special guest on Trainer Talk, presented by Bullet Train on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Chad, I can tell you, going back to the beginning of the interview, that you're already my favorite trainer we've ever had on the show, because you came out and mentioned Holy Bull without me even having to bring it up. So, well done.
Yeah, he was a real neat door. I mean, never got up close to him. Don't know any of his connections. Just really liked the horse. I was a fan of his, especially came to Saratoga and ran so well.
Were you at Saratoga?
Would love to have Holy Bull right now in my barn.
Yeah, who wouldn't? Were you at Saratoga the day he won the Travers?
I was. Yeah, I was there. And I said I didn't get to get too close to him, but had been a fan up to the horse, up the horse leading up to the race, excuse me. And it was just, it's great to see him run so well in the Travers, a race that I would love to win someday myself.
Well, Chad, obviously this show much more about you and your life and your background than it is about the current horses in training, but you have one horse that we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about right now, and that's Normandy Invasion, who is ultra talented. He's heading to the Wood Memorial on Saturday. How's he doing? What can you tell us about the big horse?
He's doing great. He's had his final piece of work on Sunday. He's ready to go for the Wood, and just hopefully he can have a clean trip and come with that late kick of his and get the job done.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because when you and I spoke on the phone before you went to New Orleans for the Risen Star, you told me that, you know, he was set, he was ready to go, but your ultimate goal is to peak on the first Saturday in May and not obviously in the Risen Star. Well, he obviously had a tough trip that afternoon, but still on course to peak on that first Saturday in May. Is the game plan still intact?
Yeah, it's still intact. And, you know, we know we're definitely behind the eight ball in terms of points, so we're not even in the Derby yet. But I think we're giving him a fair chance to make the race in the Wood. It's a tough race. He needs to show up and run in the first two, really, to get in the Derby. And And we're okay with that risk. If he doesn't make the race, then we'll, some of the other great races to point him towards. But I would like to get him into the Derby. I think he deserves a shot in the Derby. And if he runs well in the wood, he will get there.
It was kind of my impression that the track at Fairgrounds when he ran in the Risen Star was a little funky for a big horse like him with a long stride. I wasn't totally convinced that he'd even like it. Do you think that contributed to the fact that he didn't run a little bit better?
It could have. You know, he definitely had some trouble around the gate. You know, he got the tight turns there. And, you know, but he still came with his good kick, and it was just a little bit too late. I think he got the race he needed. We knew those risks going into the Risen Star about the track and stuff, but on paper it looked like the right spot. He was the favorite going the gate. So it was a risk we took. Didn't work out well for us. But hopefully if we win the wood, we'll look back and say, you know, at least he got the race he needed out of that Risen Star.
Chad, do you allow yourself to even think that far ahead to the first Saturday in May and even dream about what it would be like if you were to win?
I try not to do that. You know, it's just, you know, I just plan as well as I can for these races and trying to get too far ahead of myself. And, you know, it's definitely going to be a huge race for me, but I haven't really thought beyond just getting him into the gate.
All right, Trader Chad Brown, our special guest here on Trainer Talk. Chad, just about ready to wrap things up here, but one thing we do like to do at the end of Trainer Talk here is to find out exactly what trainers like to do when they're not involved with racing, some of your other hobbies and things that you like. I know Ralph Nix was in the first half of the show. He's a big golfer. What are some of your other hobbies?
Unfortunately, with this business, the busier you get, the less time you have for hobbies. So, you know, I just been so busy trying to build my business at a young age. I mean, used to be big into fishing and golfing, but the last few years it's been very busy. But you know, just really spend a lot of time around the barn. I love what I do, and it's very challenging to me. And you know, if I'm not training horses, I'm going to a sale or always trying to strategize or go to farms and scout out new horses and anything we can do to get better. So it's, you know, when you're training horses, it's not so much a job, it's a way of life. Somebody told me that when I was young, and I can see that. And as long as you love what you're doing, you know, I just don't think of it as work. So I'm lucky for that.
I think that's the most common answer that we get to that question as well. All the great trainers, just they're so focused on what they're doing, and it's a 365-day-a-year job, and you know that's your life. That's what you do. Do you follow any sports teams or anything like that?
Yeah, I'm a big game guy. I may not watch the whole NCAA tournament, but I'm watching the Final Four, or I'm going to watch the Super Bowl, or I'm going to watch the World Series. That's me. So when I know, you know, something big's on the line, I tune in.
All right, he's trainer Chad Brown, and he is one of the best in the business. He's on the Derby Trail this year with Normandy Invasion. And Chad, continued success. Really appreciate you taking the time. You've always been very accommodating to us, and I can't thank you enough. And all the best this weekend, and all the best here in the future.
Thanks for having me. It's a great show.
Thanks, Chad. All right, trainer Chad Brown, wrapping up Trainer Talk here on this Wednesday afternoon. Good stuff, man. Looking back on Bobby, and you were so close to Bobby Frankel, it had to be like a little trip down memory lane for you.
Oh yeah, well, you know, anybody that was around Bobby that really, really knew him well, enjoyed his company, and I think of him often, and you know, I miss having him around. I mean, we used to have some great conversations. I mean, you had one conversation, you were smitten with him,
right?
You know, just one of the most brilliant horse trainers ever, and fantastic guy. So, you know, and I see a lot of the same things that Chad does are things that Bobby did, and he learned his lessons well from, you know, in my opinion, the greatest trainer that ever lived.
Well, that Wood Memorial Stakes is a race that you're going to hear live with us this weekend on the Horse Racing Radio Network. We will be at Santa Anita, but our Chad Summers will be on site at Aqueduct to bring you all of that insight, up-to-the-minute updates and interviews right from the track. So you'll be able to join us from 5 to 7:30 Eastern Time Saturday afternoon, and you can visit our website for more information, horseracingradio.net. Of course, you can tune in nationwide on Sirius 93. We're also going to be hosting our Equine Forum show live from Santa Anita on Saturday morning, so that should be good.
Yeah, we're going to be very busy. No time to go to the beach or the pool. We're going to be working the whole time.
Come on, you might sneak in a Dodger game or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, now you're talking. Yeah.
That would be okay.
Friday night.
All right, don't forget, we are back here on Thursday afternoon, 3 to 7 Eastern Time. Our BristNet.com call-in show, presented by Twin Spires, is the final furlong show tomorrow night, 6 to 7 Eastern. And then, of course, on Friday, 3 to 7 Eastern Time, 3 to 6, our live race coverage, 6 to 7, the Express Bet Weekend Stakes Preview. That's going to be a good one this weekend as we get you ready for all the big races, including the Santa Anita Derby and the Wood Memorial.
Yeah, it's a great weekend. Really looking forward to these two races.
All right, for our producer, Lee Della Pina, Jude Feld, I'm Mike Pena. We'll talk to you tomorrow on HRN. Thanks for listening.
Good night, Barbados.